Thank you for coming to the podcast. This is Top Turtle MMA Podcast on CageSidePress.com. I'm Danny Gilby Freeland, joined as always by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. UFC 300 is finally here. That's right, the biggest event of the year is in Vegas, and we'll be breaking down the three title fights at the top of the card as part of our Fights, Dogs, and Parlay segment, where we'll also give you an underdog and a parlay that we think is going to make your wallet fat this weekend. And as always, we're bringing you guys the interviews you know and love, and it is a stacked show today. Kicking off the show this week is UFC Bantamweight Champion Raquel Pennington, who is talking about the Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison fight, her upcoming schedule, as well as what it felt like to win the title through all of that crazy fight week she had. And it's a phenomenal interview, so make sure to tune into that. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Jim Miller as he gets ready for UFC 300. A phenomenal interview as well every single time we have him on. So you're going to want to get to all that great content. But before we do, I have to let you know that this episode is brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. It's a drink that's, well, it's really drinkable. Should you stretch before you drink it? Certainly couldn't hurt, because Game Up is not a hard seltzer. Hard seltzers just didn't work out. Game Up plays entirely in a league of its own, and it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit, punch, and grape. It hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Game Up is for MMA maulers, urban fitness freaks, peak-banging badasses, tough mudder mothers, beer league brawlers, hot yoga hotties, high handicap hackers, committed cornhole hawkers, or even just professional poolside posers who game up and get after it. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team. Game Up brings you this episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast, and it starts right now.
The hosts are ready. The fighters are ready. Listeners, make some noise if you are ready for Top Turtle MMA with Shockwave and Gumby.
All right, and joining me today is the women's bantamweight champ of the UFC, Raquel Pennington. So, Raquel, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, so I'm great. Now, I wanted to ask you, because we're 2 months removed from you basically achieving a dream that so many people have, you've had for a really long time. It wasn't like it was a short climb to the top for you. 2 months in, has it set in? Do you like feel the magnitude of it now?
Absolutely. It's finally soaking in. You know, I've been busy. My lifestyle has definitely gotten, I've already had a busy lifestyle, and now it's about 500 times more busy. But you know, at first it was really hard for it to soak in. I got sick during fight week, and then just kind of going through the fight, and then coming home, and I was sick until the last week of February or so. So it was just like, when you're not feeling well, like you don't really care to think about anything else. And it was crazy, because it's like, you know, I've accomplished the ultimate goal. And like you said, most people dream about, you know, I've had the opportunity to get out there a second time and fight for it, which I'm truly grateful for. But being in this sport, you know, I mean, you sit here and you dream about it. And that's what most athletes are going to do. They don't even get that opportunity. And that's just the reality of it. So going through that and then feeling the way that I felt for a long time, it was like, man, this kind of sucks. But after I started feeling better, kind of got back into the gym, got back into my routine and everything else, it definitely soaked in. Been doing a lot of meet and greets, guest speakings, all kinds of different things, and just being around everybody, seeing their love and support, seeing the excitement coming from everybody, the excitement of the kids. That's really like just really, really set things in.
That's awesome to hear. Now, before I get to talking about more of that kind of stuff, I want to ask about the illness leading up to the fight, because, you know, I think that's something that maybe wasn't out there all that much. I'm sure you didn't want it out there heading into the fight all that much. So what are we talking about? Was it, you know, did you have the flu? Did you have like head colds? Like, were we talking about like real bad stuff? How bad were we off?
We were flying out Tuesday before the fight to Canada. We were at the airport. Our travel got delayed. It was a mess. My luggage got lost. It just turned into the longest day. And while we were at the airport, I started feeling, it was actually the night before, I started feeling like my throat was hurting a little bit, and I was like, okay, I need to jump on this. But you know, going through my thyroid issue with USADA and everything, and the doctors following me with everything and putting me on medication, then all of a sudden I'm getting suspended for it all. I don't take anything anymore. But so I went to the store that night and I got some throat coat tea and I started drinking it. Then the next day while we were sitting at the airport, it was progressively getting worse. And I started getting a little cough with it. So then I called UFC and I'm like, hey, like, what can I take? And then it just turned into one thing after another. I ended up getting to Canada. They're like, hey, we need to test you for COVID, RSV, and the flu. And I was like, we're not testing. Like, we cannot test being in Canada for one and for two. Like, okay, if I'm sick, then, or like, if I have any of that, then what's gonna happen? You know what I mean? So it was just like, it was stressful. They ended up giving me some medication and they're like, you should feel a little bit better. But then I think just going through a weight cut, I broke down my immune system. I never sleep the night of a weight cut. So the lack of sleep, then losing all the weight. I woke up or I got up Friday morning, went to weigh-ins, and I felt miserable. But I put my game face on. Between the official weigh-ins and ceremonial weigh-ins, I slept and then I got up and I went through. We went to a team dinner and I didn't have an appetite. Like, I didn't recover like normal. And then the morning of the fight, normally you wake up, all these emotions, all these nerves, the adrenaline, excitement, like it's a roller coaster. I woke up super early, because I wasn't feeling well. I was coughing. I was spitting up really green mucus. I couldn't even breathe. I felt like I had razor blades in the back of my throat. I had a migraine. I had pressure in my face already, and I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I'm supposed to go get into a fight tonight. Tisha ended up waking up and she's like, happy fight day, how are you feeling? And the minute I started speaking, like, you could just tell. And I was like, Tisha, I don't think I can fight. And needless to say, my entire day, it was a good thing I had a late call time to the arena, because my entire day was spent with my coaches, my sports psychologist. We were just trying to get myself together, I guess. And then I'll tell you what, you know, I was warming up and I was like, oh gosh, like I ended up really nervous with the fact that it was like, okay, if I have to go 25 minutes, like, am I gonna be able to breathe through this? And I had a great camp. Conditioning was great, everything was great. So it was just really frustrating. I had another mountain to climb, and while they were introducing us and I'm standing in the octagon, I tell you what, I was as flat as can be. And I told my coaches, I was like, this is gonna hurt. And they're like, hey, we do not care what this fight looks like. We just need you to get the job done. Drag her in deep waters and win that belt. And I was like, okay. And so the rest is history. There we went.
I love it. Now, you know, you mentioned kind of in that answer, there was a lot of inherent, you know, talk about a worry about not getting another shot, right? You mentioned before, not a lot of people get a second shot. You mentioned here, you know, what happens if I'm sick? I'm not getting out of this fight, right? Like, I want to be a part of this. Leading into when they offered you this fight, there was lots of talk about different people for the women's bantamweight title after Amanda let it go. Were you sure you were going to be a part of this all along? Did you know the second one was coming? Or was this kind of been a worry in the back of your mind for a long time that, you know, time number two doesn't come for everybody?
No, when I was fighting Ketlin Vera, it was supposed to be number one contender fight, and then that got pushed out. And then I figured it'd be me next, and then all of a sudden it turned into, hey, you're gonna rematch Irene Aldana, which made no sense to me because I already beat her. I was ranked number two, she was five, and they're like, we're giving Juliana a third shot, and it was just like, dude, nobody cares. And they were like, hey, listen, lover or hater, everybody will love watching her get her ass beat for five rounds. And it was just like, okay, like, whatever, that might be the truth, but in reality, like, it was still frustrating being the athlete waiting there and them continuously saying one thing after another and it not happening. So I knew for a while, like, it was coming. It's just, when was it actually going to happen?
Well, that's good to hear. Now, I want to ask you now about the future too. But before we do, we should talk a little bit of UFC 300 because that's just about a week away at our time of talking. There's obviously a fight that really could potentially matter to you on that card, right? Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison is a fight that I think a lot of people have circled as being one of interest for the women's bantamweight division. So give us a little breakdown. How do you see that fight going? Do you believe Kayla Harrison's grappling is the answer to Holly Holm?
You know, it's kind of one of those things. I think Kayla, obviously, she's extremely good at her judo and into grappling, but it's almost like Ronda Rousey, you know, if you throw your hands and let your striking go, it kind of exposes that weakness of theirs. And I think she truly had that challenge with Larissa Pacheco on the PFL, and it was not a great night for her. With that being said, Holly, her last few fights, I mean, she hasn't been the Holly Holm that came into the UFC really letting her striking go. If she turns around and brings that girl into the octagon, she can definitely beat Kayla. If she just tries to turn it into her hugging match that she's been doing, she's walking right into Kayla's ball game right there. And so, I mean, a fight's a fight. It can go either way. But I think honestly, it just depends on if Holly wants to let her hands go or not.
I totally agree on that one. Now, you know, you kind of downplayed the way that she's been fighting lately, and some of that was the fight against you, I'm assuming as well. But you know, like the Kayla Harrison, you're sort of writing off her judo. Do you feel that these two are fighting for the number one contendership? Do you think that these two should be the ones who are next?
So here's the deal. Like, I've been in the UFC for a really long time. I was never handed anything, and I've had to work from the ground up to get to where I'm at. So being that athlete who was never handed anything, who never fast-tracked and had to keep going and going and going, there are a ton of women in this division that have been busting their ass, and they deserve the opportunity before Kayla, who comes into the UFC, has a huge name behind her, and stuff like that. I don't find it fair for them to turn around and fast track her, but on the business aspect, I see it. So, you know, I mean, either way, but as far as being an athlete, like, I don't think it's fair to the other ones, but I'm not opposed to fighting anybody. So,
Well, let's talk about some of those other ones too, then, because you know you already mentioned Juliana Pena. People like watching her get punched in the face. Is that a fight that interests you as well? Does that do you feel like that one sort of moves the needle?
that's the fight that I've been waiting for 13 years. I figured the Ultimate Fighter, her and I would fight in the finale. When I won fight of the season, I sustained some injuries. So when I went into what was it, the semifinals, I ended up losing in that fight. And I figured, I mean, that was 11 years ago, so I figured it would have happened somewhere in there, but somehow that fight's never aligned. And so for my team and I, Juliana's the one that we have in mind next.
I like it. Now, do you have other names that you want to just drop in there that are kind of, you know, interesting to you, throw some shine to some of the women who've, like you said, have been going at it for a while and sort of have earned their right to talk about being in this top echelon?
Honestly, any of them. Everybody brings a different challenge to the table. I love challenges. And you know, I mean, a fight's a fight. So any of them, I'm not opposed to any of them. But for me, like I said, I mean, Juliana's the one that I have in sight. But we'll see. We'll see how business plays out.
Well, I'd obviously love to see you punch her in the face a little bit. So, you know, I usually end these with a prediction, but you obviously don't have a fight coming up right away. So, do you want to give me a timeline? When can we expect to see Rocky Pennington's first title defense?
Well, right now, so mid camp of that last fight, I ended up getting stem cell on my shoulder. So I'm currently taking the time to properly rehab that. Tisha's now in fight camp. She fights May 11th and is making her return after 2 years off. So we've kind of flipped roles. You know, while I was in camp, she was holding down the fort. She was playing mama or mommy and doing everything. And so now it's me. I got the mama role and I'm hanging out with the baby, doing rehab. And Tisha's getting ready to shine. After that, the baby turns 1 in June. And so I just kind of want to enjoy some family time. And really, honestly, it just depends on my shoulder and stuff. So I'm looking probably not until around like September or October.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, you know, I said I like to end these with a prediction. So then give me a prediction. Tisha Pennington, I understand she's now going by Tisha Pennington fighting Tabitha Ricci. Give me the prediction on that one.
Listen. I am super excited for this fight. I told Tisha, I was like, it was crazy because we came home from Canada after my fight. I'm absolutely exhausted. I'm not feeling well. The last thing I want to think about is fighting. And she was just inspired with me winning the world title. She reached out, she got the fight, and she's like, hey, we're gonna sit here and watch film. And I told her, I was like, listen here, like, I'm even more exhausted watching this film because for one, you're finally fighting somebody your size. You're fighting somebody with the same exact physique as you, and you both, like, their gas tanks are insane. Like, I, this fight is just going to be absolutely exhausting to watch. But with that being said, not just because Tisha's my wife, you know, I feel like Tisha has a lot more experience. She's a veteran of the sport. She, a lot of people are doubting her just because she's taken 2 years off, but I'll tell you what, like, she's coming back with a different strength behind her, different motivation. And she's had the talent, all these years. I do feel like Tabitha is still pretty green. She can definitely, like, she's gonna climb and she's gonna excel. But I think with the matchup with Tisha, you know, it's gonna be a good night for Tisha, but it's gonna be a great fight.
Well, we certainly can't wait for it, and we appreciate the time. Once again, fans, this has been the UFC Bantamweight Champion, Rocky Pennington. Rocky, thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. It's good talking to you.
Well, we have enjoyed that interview with UFC Bantamweight Champ Raquel Pennington. I once again am Daniel Gumby Vreeland, joined now by my co-host, Shockwave Dave Tremonti. Dave, UFC 300 finally here. You know, we've bantered back and forth a little bit about whether or not this fight card is deserving of the UFC 300 moniker. But instead of digging back into that, I want to start here. It's loaded top to bottom. There are at least apex headliners from the very first to the very last fight on this fight card. And I wanted to ask you, which fight here that we're not going to get a chance to talk about are you most excited for?
Well, I am excited to see Bo Nickel fight because I want to just keep seeing his evolution, but I'm not excited per se about that fight because I expect him to win, although I hope he doesn't. That'd be exciting. So my answer is Charlie Olives versus Armin Sakurian. Sakurian, you know, he's taken a loss to the champ. He lost to Mateus Gamrot via unanimous decision. Other than that, he's been pretty freaking impressive. He's got a lot of wins in the UFC, and it's Charlie Olives trying to battle himself back into title contention. I think that's a fun fight.
Yeah, I like that fight a lot. That probably would have been my answer. My close second is I'm really intrigued about what Aljamain Sterling at featherweight looks like. Because for years, he talked about the fact that the bantamweight, you know, weight cut was killing him. And he managed to make it to champ status at bantamweight despite the fact that that weight cut was killing him. You know, I'm interested to see if his wrestling can play at 45. Obviously, Calvin Kattar, a tough test there. So, like, the perfect kind of first step up fight for him moving to a new division. I'm really excited to see that one.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm really excited for, and that's us breaking down these fights for UFC 300, even if it's a bit of an underwhelming card. It's a great card, don't get me wrong. It's just not at the top. I don't think it's what you'd expect from a UFC 300 when Jemele Hill is headlining it, but it is what it is. We, of course, like seeing Pereira. I was someone who said, hey, that's the, I mean, I'm cool with that fight. There's a little bit of a storyline there with Hill having beaten Glover Teixeira, Pereira's training partner. But that all being said, Gumby, let's break out our favorite segment on the show. It's Fights, Dogs, and Parlays for UFC 300. Who sponsors it?
This Fights, Dogs, and Parlays is brought to you by Game Up Heart Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Heart Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, it's no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. And it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit punch, and grape, and hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team.
All right, let's start as we are known to do with the main event. It's Fajita, a -125 favorite. Jemele Hill, just a slight dog at +105. It's almost like Vegas doesn't know what to make of this. Hill, of course, is a former champion, won the vacant UFC Light Heavyweight Championship from Glover Teixeira back in January of 2023. In the UFC, all told, he is 7-1-1. There was a no contest in there. Originally a TKO win for Hill, but overturned after he tested positive for the marijuana. So you could basically say he's 8-1 in the UFC, the one loss being to Paul Craig via TKO. But after that Craig loss, he reeled off 4 wins in a row, including one over an aging and on his way out Glover Teixeira. And now Teixeira's training partner gets to avenge that loss. I'm picking Pajeda. He's on a 2-fight win streak, beating Jan Blankovic and Jiří Procházka. He had lost to Izzy Adesanya. After beating Izzy Adesanya, he's been nothing short of impressive in the UFC. His lone loss in the UFC is to Izzy Adesanya. Who you got here, Gumby?
I've got Pajeda, and I got to tell you, I think this line is wacky, man. I don't know how anybody can get behind Jamal Hill at this kind of price. Because when this fight was announced, I was like, you know, Pettis has got to be a negative 300 favorite or negative, you know, at least 250. And to see it as damn near a pick'em, it kind of shocks me because on one hand, you got Pettis, who I think Jamal Hill wants to stand and trade with. And I know that, you know, sometimes you can hear pre-fight interviews and you have to say to yourself, oh, you know, that's just the thing he's saying or this or that. I think he actually believes he can stand and trade with Dax Pajeda because, look, he's standed and traded with every single guy he's beaten. But the fact of the matter is Pajeda has been in there with Jan Blankovic. Pajeda has been in there twice with Israel Adesanya and looked the better of all of those fights, right? Those are good kickboxers. Those are good dudes on the feet. Who is the best boxer Jamal Hill has fought? I think you have to say Johnny Walker. And he's, you know, say what you want about Johnny Walker. I like Johnny Walker a lot. Johnny Walker is not a careful and skilled kickboxer. You know, he's exciting. He's fun. You know, he's maybe good offensively, if you want to say that. But he's a wild card, and he's crazy. We are going to see a technical kickboxer like Alex Pajeda just absolutely piece up Jamal Hill here, in my opinion. I think this line's crazy. I think you have to go with Alex Pajeda.
Same here. Agreed. Vegas more sure of itself. Zhang Weili, a minus 500. Yan Xiaonan, a plus 385. Weili Zhang is coming off a win over Amanda Lemos. She beat Carla Esparza, Joanna Jędrzejczyk before that. Of course, the, you know, lone sore spot on her resume is the two back-to-back losses to Rose Namajunas, one being for a split decision, though. But she is on a three-fight win streak. Yan Xiaonan, also on a bit of a streak herself, two wins in a row over Mackenzie Dern and Jessica Andrade. That was after back-to-back losses to Marina Rodriguez and Carla Esparza, so 2-2 in her last four. Who you got?
I'm going with Wang Jiali. I think I just can't imagine looking at this this fight in finding a way for Yan Xiaonan to win. Like, a lot of her fights so far, she's won by being like the faster, quicker volume striker, with the exception of the Jessica Andrade fight, which was by my estimation, just a complete anomaly and kind of the Jessica Andrade seems to be on the way out kind of deal. But like, Zhang Weili is absolutely as fast as her and perhaps can do better in terms of volume. Plus, she's powerful in a way that I don't think a lot of other fighters are at that weight class, right? Like, she can put you in the clinch and is like way stronger than everybody else in this division. And then when you add in on top of that, like, I think she's a better power puncher than Yan Xiaonan. I just think there's like literally every advantage in Zhang Weili's favor. So I don't know how you wind up on the Yan Xiaonan side. So yeah, of course, I'm taking Zhang Weili.
All right, same here. Justin Gaethje is a minus 175 favorite to Max Holloway, a plus 150 dog. This is a fun fight. Gaethje on a two-fight win streak since losing to Charlie Olives. That was for the vacant UFC light heavyweight title back in May of 2022. He reeled off wins over Dustin Poirier via head kick KO and a majority decision win over Rafael Fiziev. Holloway, on the other hand, since losing to Alexander Volkanovski back in July of 2022, he slowed down his pace, fought twice in 2023 with two wins over Arnold Allen and Jung Chan Sung. That was a fight of the night. And if you want to peel it back further, other than the Volkanovski loss, which has happened three times, but the third and final one, that was sandwiched in between another two-fight win streak over Calvin Kattar and Yair Rodriguez. So he's 4-1 in his last five, but he finds himself the dog here. Who you got?
So I love Max Holloway, and don't get me wrong. I would love to see Max Holloway win this fight, sort of cement his place in the lightweight division and maybe put together another run. The problem I have is he's already done this once. He's gone up to 155 pounds before, went toe-to-toe with Dustin Poirier, and looked just as good in terms of boxing as Dustin Poirier did. There was one difference maker. The difference maker in that fight for me, clearly, the power of Dustin Poirier's hands. He hit harder than Max Holloway, and he hit just as often as he did. They had about the same cardio. They had about the same punching acumen, punching volume. It was just the punching power clearly went to Dustin Poirier in a way that made it look like, oh yeah, Max Holloway is a featherweight. He doesn't belong here. Now you're going to put him in with a guy who, first of all, can't be knocked out. I refuse to believe that Justin Gaethje can be knocked out. And then second of all, has way more punching power than Dustin Poirier. No offense to Dustin Poirier, way more punching power than Dustin Poirier, and all the cardio in the world to go for five rounds. Like, I think that this is a worse fight than Dustin Poirier was for Max Holloway. I get why they're doing it. I get why they want to make this happen. I get that this is an exciting fight, and it will probably be very fun to watch. I just don't know how Max Holloway comes out of this against a guy who can match his volume and exceed his power when there's, like, no wrestling to be had here for Max Holloway. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Justin Gaethje here, and I'm feeling pretty good about that line as well.
I like Holloway. I like everything you just said. I agree. I do like getting a little bit of dog money on Holloway. It's just a gut feeling I have. I do find him to be the way more well-rounded fighter. I know what you're saying, though, about not getting him down to the ground so he can't utilize those submission skills. But in a scramble, if he were to, let's just say, knock him down, I don't know. So I'm going to go the other way with than you on that one. Our dog of the week, though, official dog of the week is Jim Miller, a plus 150 over Bobby Green.
So, yeah, I love Jim Miller in this spot, not just because he's a friend of the show, but look, late career Jim Miller is a different animal. I know we thought about him early in the career being a guy who, look, he needs a takedown, he needs to work his submission skills, or he's going to lose to these guys with a little bit crisper of boxing. And you might look at this fight with Bobby Green and be like, Bobby Green's a decent wrestler, and that's probably why the odds are sitting here at plus 150. But look, Jim Miller is out here putting people away. He's won 5 of his last 6, all 5 of them by finish, and he's largely getting it done with the hands. I love the way he's loading up on his punches. He's surprising people constantly, and I know Bobby Green is tough in there, but I think we're going to see a Jim Miller classic performance where he gets those hands going, and he gets the other guy to start panicking, that guy to start wrestling, or that guy to drop down after getting hit hard, and we see Jim Miller snatch up a guillotine. So look for the Jim Miller club and sub here, and I love the plus 150.
All right. Our parlay to play is Gaethje, a minus 175, and Deiveson Figueiredo, a minus 305. Very strong favorites, but parlay them to get together, and it will get you plus money. Let's hear it.
Yeah, so this is just going to get you like plus 105, barely over the mark. But as I outlined before, I love Justin Gaethje. I think this number is too good against a guy who I respect in Max Holloway, but I think is just going to be less powerful. And in the opening prelim, Deiveson Figueiredo fighting Cody Garbrandt. Is there anybody more primed to take advantage of a weak-chinned, overexcited Cody Garbrandt than Deiveson Figueiredo? Deiveson Figueiredo hits like a damn truck. He comes forward. And he seems to be technically proficient in taking punches the other way. This is not a guy who goes out there and gets flatlined. He is as tough as they come. I love his outlook at 135. I think he's a dark horse threat in this division, despite his age. Give me Deiveson Figueiredo, Justin Gaethje, both to get it done for plus money.
All right. That wraps up this edition of Fights, Dogs, and Parlays. Let us know if we did you right or did you dirty for UFC 300. We're accepting both love and hate feedback at Top Turtle MMA on the social media spots. Gumby, we're having a party here. What should we do next?
We're going to transition now to my interview with the aforementioned Jim Miller, who is joining us just before his UFC 300 bout. We're going to be talking about that bout, his early days of fighting in Atlantic City, and so much more. And we're going to get to that interview for you right now. All right, joining me today is Jim Miller, who fights Bobby Green at UFC 300. That fight is on April 13th. So we're obviously going to talk about UFC 300, Jim. But before we do that, I want to talk about the fact that we're recording this right now on the eve of UFC Atlantic City. They're going back to Atlantic City for, you know, the first time in quite a while. I know like 5 of your 6 first pro fights were in Atlantic City. And I know UFC 300 obviously means a lot to you. But was it a little bit of a bummer that you didn't get to have that kind of like homecoming on the Jersey Shore there?
No. You know, what was it? 10 out of my first 12 fights before the UFC were in Atlantic City. It's not doing so great down there. So, you know, it's great that they're back. Hopefully try to, you know, like get some initiative to rebuild the place. Right. But, I'd rather fight in Vegas, honestly, you know,
And just out of curiosity, you know, like thinking back to those Atlantic City fights, you've got some big names on the resume down there, right? We've got, you know, people that, you know, household names, Frankie Edgar's, and also maybe a little bit less household names like Mushin Korbre and, and people who, you know, if you follow WEC, you heard of. Do you have any like best memories from your time? I know it was short before the UFC, but your short time before the UFC?
I mean, yeah, like it was, oh man, it's a completely different lifetime, you know, thinking about it, but fighting wasn't life yet. Right. Like I wanted it to be life. I wanted it to be the center of everything that I do, but it wasn't. So I just remember like the trips down there after, you know, like basically mid weight cut, you know, you're traveling down day before to hit weigh-ins at, you know, 7 o'clock or whatever time they were. And, you know, either at work that day or just cut weight in the morning and, getting stuck in traffic and being miserable. And yeah, it kind of feels spoiled a little bit now. Like, oh yeah, I get to go out 5 days prior and sit in a hotel room and, you know, get meals made for me and all this stuff where you're like, yeah, back in the day it was, you were just scraping things together to get a fight camp and get everything done on time and you know, pre-fight medicals, all that fun stuff. And then, yeah, having to like suffer through a 3-hour drive down to Atlantic City to weigh in while you're dehydrated.
Yeah. So no fun memories is what you're telling me. No. so, you know, you mentioned, you know, it feels like a different lifetime ago now, and it's because it was a time where fighting wasn't your life. It wasn't the thing that you were carrying your life through with. Was there a time where you felt like that switched? Can you remember the moment that it felt like you went from this is a thing I do after I get off my construction shift to this is a thing I do as a lifestyle?
You know, as soon as I signed that bat agreement for that first one, you know, in the UFC, it was, had to do one of the hardest things that I've ever had to do. And that's tell my old man that I had to quit, you know, and focus on fighting. And, yeah, like, my brother and I, you know, like one of the coolest things that I think happened in our career is that we got to sign our first UFC bat agreements and contracts sitting there together at a desk and you know, didn't expect it to happen that way. We knew we needed to dive in. We knew we needed to make it our lifestyle because it was, yeah, it'd be get up at 6 a.m., get to work at 7, work through lunch, get home at like 3:30. I'd go for a 5-mile run, grab a bite to eat, drive 45 minutes, go train for 3 hours, get back like after 10 o'clock, go to bed and do it all over again, you know, 5 days a week. So, yeah, that was, it meant a big switch for us to be able to like, hey, this is the job right now. And, yeah, like who would have known that, you know, nearly 16 years later, I'd still be doing it.
Yeah. And it's so you mentioned in there, you know, like maybe the hardest thing you had to do is to tell your dad that. Now, I'm curious if looking back, you know, some of the hard choices you made, some of the easy choices you made, was there ever anything that now, you know, like you said, 16 years later, you wish you could have gone back and done differently, that you would have changed, or, you know, kind of it's all led us here and we're happy that we're here?
Yeah, that's the type of guy that I am. It's, you know, like everything that I've got today, you know, is because of, everything that I've been through. You know, so, you know, there's been good, there's been bad. But it's made me who I am. It's given me the family that I've got. And, yeah, I wouldn't change any of it. You know, 'cause you change one thing, you change everything. And you know, there are a lot of lessons and stuff like that. And I make a solid effort to not make the same mistake twice. You know, but you know, here I am trying to fight Bobby Green for the fourth time. You know, so hopefully everything works out this time. But yeah, I'm comfortable with where I'm at and with you know, the scars that I've got along the way, and I wouldn't trade it for anything.
All right, so that's enough looking at the past. Let's look at the future. You mentioned the name Bobby Green. You've been scheduled to fight him 750 times already. So when they came to you with that name, like, we want you to try to fight Bobby Green again, that's the name we're going to put you on this historic card with. What were your first thoughts? What was the first thing that went through your head?
Sean Shelby called me with Dana and Hunter. And Dana's like, oh, what about Bobby Green? And I was like, ah, come on. You know, like, I love the fight. I do. You know, like, Bobby's been around for a long time. I mean, the first time we tried to fight was in 14. You know, I've been watching him closely for a long time. You know, we've had three fights scheduled. But yeah, like, I was just like, you know, boss, come on. Like, this fight might be jinxed, like, you know, and I don't want to lose my opportunity at 300 because this fight's jinxed, you know, and you know, whatever. I'm not superstitious, so I'm confident that this time will work out. But yeah, you know, it's a great fight. It's a fight that I've had plenty of opportunity to prepare for, you know, 6 months of training camp prior to even starting this one. So you know, I like the fight. I think it's a good fight to throw on UFC 300, and I think it's we have an opportunity to leave a mark on a historic card.
Now, you mentioned liking the fight stylistically. Is there something about the way that Bobby sort of brings it? You know, like, he's we obviously know his style, right? That forward style, that he doesn't back down. He's gonna bring a fight. Is that the aspect of the fight you like in Bobby Green?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I don't like to give my peers flack for the way they fight, right? Like, the name of the game is to win, right? And there have been fights that if I had fought a little more conservatively, I feel like I could have won some of the ones that I've dropped. And you know, I really, really appreciate when somebody shows up every time gunning for finishes, gunning to make it a tough, grueling fight, you know, and he's that guy. Like, you know, we've had champions in this promotion run away for the last 30 seconds of, you know, a round or a fight. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to knock them, because at the end of the day, the W is the thing that really matters. Right. But that's not in me, you know, and I don't think it's in Bobby either. Like, he doesn't seem like that type to just try to point out a fight, eke out a fight. Oh, I'm up ahead on the cards. I'm just gonna lay back. You know, he's the type of guy that's gonna keep fighting as hard as he can. And you know, as somebody that does the same thing, I really appreciate the heck out of that.
I love that. Now, you mentioned, you know, you're not a conservative guy. You're a guy who's been looking for the finishes. And I wanted to talk about recently, too, because, you know, I talked to you right before your last fight. We were talking about possibly picking up a finish there and having 5 out of 6 wins with 5 finishes. Yep. We obviously have successfully done that now, right? We get the finish over Gabriel Benitez. And back then you told me you still felt like you had another 5 fights in you, another 10 fights in you. Is it getting easier and easier to say, yes, this is definitely not the end, the more and more people you finish here?
Well, yeah. You know, like, when you go out and, you know, the last one was tough, right? You know, took some bumps and bruises. I mean, the one before that, it was only 23 seconds, but I broke my thumb, which was annoying. So it's like, you know, the fights, the camps are not necessarily easy, but I'm going out and I'm performing, and it's like, hey, you know, as long as I'm performing, and you know, the biggest thing honestly for me is the camps. Like, if I can get through 6 to 8 weeks of beating the crap out of myself and show up on fight night ready, like, then we're going to continue to do it, you know, because that's the hard part. The fight, it bangs you up, you take lumps, you get injured, but it's that day in, day out, trying to push your body to the limits that really is difficult. And, you know, and at this point, at 40 years old, I mean, like, I got to tell you, like, when I'm in fight camp, I don't have time for fucking anything else. Like, you know, like recovery has become such a big part of it that it's like, I've got training and recovery and then, you know, my family. And it's really hard because it's like, hey, you know, like if I'm going to be fighting, I know that there's a day when I'm not going to be fighting anymore. So I have to set myself up and get myself in a good position for when fighting's not the way that I'm making money. But during training camp now, I can't, I don't have the time to juggle anything else. So, yeah, it's fun living the lifestyle. It's fun doing the stuff. It's grueling, you know, but, yeah, as long as I can keep making it through these camps healthy, we're gonna go on for a few more. I've put it out there, and I'm gonna be a man of my word. If we're talking before my 50th UFC fight, that will be my last fight. I don't want to fight any. It sounds stupid. I don't want to fight any more than 50 times in the UFC.
that's an insane sentence in itself.
Right, yeah. So, you know, hopefully at that point, I've got 30 wins, 50 fights. Hey, you know what? We're good there.
Yeah, that they certainly can't do much better than that. Now, you know, I want to ask you about this fight and get your final prediction and all that kind of good stuff. But I did want to ask you about UFC 300 in general, because, you know, some people very hyped on it. It's got plenty of names, right? Obviously, we've got a first fight of the night that's got a pair of former champions in it, which is crazy to say.
Yeah.
You know, like, are you a fan of the fight card? Do you look out across it and say, God, look at all these names? Or you kind of pass that in your career where you don't look at all of that?
No, UFC 100 was like the first time that I got to really share a card with like the names of guys that I'd been following for years. And, you know, to come in on this one and I think there's a dozen, you know, current or former champs on the card. Like that's insane. It's literally insane. I mean, 299 was an absolutely phenomenal card, stacked, right? But it's like this 300 I think the one thing that is kind of held it back a little bit is that it doesn't have like that massive main event. Like I like the main event. I really do. I think it's an awesome fight. But like, I think that most of us kind of wanted that like, oh, holy shit. You know, like, I can't believe this is going to be the main event. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way it works out, right? Mm-hmm. Like fighters get hurt. Fighters have to, you know, other commitments, this and that. And it's like, things just don't always shake out. But honestly, I think the card is absolutely fantastic.
That's awesome to hear. Now, I usually like to end these things with a prediction. You pretty much nailed it last time, so I'm going to make you give me another one. UFC 300, Bobby Green, April 13th. Tell me how this one ends.
In a Jim Miller fight, you know, like I'm going in there, I'm pressing him. He's pressing back, which is I thrive in the fray, you know, and there's nothing to hold back for anymore in my point of view, you know, like I get chills in the back before I come out for the fight because I get to just go out and have fun now. So, you know, and I'm a dangerous man when I'm having fun. So, I'm looking for the finish like always. You know, I don't think I've won by decision since I turned 35, you know, so, you know, we got a pretty good streak going. So yeah, I'm going in there. I'm going to get in his face and, I'm going to look for that first opportunity and I'm going to pounce on it.
All right. Well, you're here to hear first, folks. This is Dan Jim Miller, who fights Bobby Green, UFC 300. Once again, that fight April 13th. Jim, thank you for the time. I always appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And that's going to do it for another episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast. We want to thank you, the fans, for tuning in each and every week. We would not have a show without you guys. We also want to thank our sponsors, Game Up Hard Hydration, and remind you guys that you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Top Turtle MMA in both of those locations. And until next week, I'm Daniel Gumby Freeland. He's Shockwave Dave Tremonte. And we'll catch you then.